Good morning, Dr. Lou.
How are you doing this morning?
We're doing well, sir.
Well, listen, I just wanted to say that I hope that everyone, that you and your family and everyone in Radio Land had a wonderful Easter, despite the fact that Biden proclaimed Easter Sunday as the Transgender Day of Visibility. I find it very interesting how Pelosi, Biden, John Kerry, all Catholics, continue to promote the radical agenda of transgenderism as well as abortion, despite the fact that the Catholic Church is totally opposed to all those things. I also note that, you know, I've said this before, how is it that the Church allows them to go to communion when they have those positions? In fact, a few years ago, a South Carolina bishop actually refused communion to Biden, and then the Pope basically overrode it. So one has to ask the question, I mean, if the faith is so important, how in the world can you not live it just because you're a politician? I don't get all that, Mark, but that's not what I wanted to talk about today, but I think it's an important part of our conversation about politics and religion. But for those of you who are joining us, I do want to talk about several things this morning. I mentioned it earlier when I was talking to Mark. So, and because I've got a lot, let me just get into it without repeating what I said earlier today, okay? I want to start with foreign policy. And it seems to me that this question about the Israeli-U.S. relations is extremely important for obvious reasons. The longest supporter that we've had in the Middle East, the only democracy there. And yet, because of issues pertaining to the Israeli reaction to the October 7th attack on Hamas, that's led to a, I won't say a rupture yet, but we're getting close to a rupture because Biden and Blinken are pressing hard on the Israelis to give more aid to the Gazans, okay, and to have a ceasefire. Now, let's look at each of these things separately, okay? Let's take a look at how Biden and Blinken have phrased and the language that they've used in terms of describing what the Americans want, okay? When we use terms such as the present situation is quote-unquote unacceptable, okay, what does that really mean? Does it mean that the Israelis are supposed to stop everything that they're doing just to placate the Americans? I would argue that when you look at the whole situation in terms of what Hamas does as its own strategy, embedding itself inside the population, and they've done this forever, and you've seen it with all the tunnels and all the rest of it, okay? So how is it that we're supposed to tell the Israelis, well, go easy now because, you know, civilian casualty, okay? I understand that, but I do think that the Israelis have taken a very responsible approach to this, warning people that, you know, we're going in here, get yourself away, whatever. Some people have mentioned that you have a situation where there's sort of a double standard here. As the Afghan withdrawal was going on, you may recall, the Americans launched a drone strike that was supposed to be aimed at some of the people who had committed, you know, the bombing at the Kabul air base. And instead of the bad guys getting killed, 7 kids and a family were killed. Okay? Has anyone been held accountable in in the Biden administration? Obviously not. But Israelis did fire 2 of the commanders involved in the latest incident, which involved aid workers getting killed in a car with an attack by an airplane. So my point here is that when you use a term such as unacceptable, it seems clear something else is going on here. Because, I mean, we're guilty of the same problems, okay? And again, you will never find from me criticism of the U.S. military based on issues along the lines of, you know, this question of collateral damage. I mean, the reality is bad things happen in war, okay? Whether it's World War II, Korea, Vietnam. And let me distinguish between, let's just say, the My Lai massacre and collateral damage. Those kinds of things, like with My Lai, those people who were responsible for that were punished. So we do have this problem of civilians getting killed in a war, okay? But for us to take the moral high ground here and say this is unacceptable, what's going on, both from the humanitarian standpoint as well as from the standpoint of the use of force that has hurt civilians, it seems to me that this is a bridge too far for me to at least say, oh yeah, Biden and Blinken are right. No, they're not right. They're absolutely wrong. And all this is doing is undermining the Israelis' ability to root out Hamas, which is the goal. And let's just be clear about this. Hamas always used the strategy of embedding itself inside the people in order to protect their fighters from retribution. Well, at this particular juncture, if Hamas is allowed, say in Rafah, where evidently there are four or five battalions left, then the whole war effort on the Israelis' part is going to be negated completely. So you have to ask yourself, what are Blinken and Biden, you know, doing, pushing this humanitarian aid issue as well as a ceasefire when the Israelis are really on the verge of eliminating the very real threat that created the problem to begin with on October 7th, and long before October 7th, the Israelis had to deal with Hamas. Okay, let's be clear about this. So at any rate, here we are on the cusp of getting rid of Hamas, which has always been a major question about how the Israelis were going to be able to live next door to a group that essentially wanted Israel to just die and go away. I mean, we can talk about a two-state solution, as we have done before, but this two-state solution requires, you know, a reciprocal relationship of toleration for the existence of both sides. And that has not existed, and it's not going to exist as long as the Iranians, who have their proxies, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, I mean, you see where all this goes? There is no solution to it unless we go back to what Trump did to bring Iran to its knees. And that ain't happening. And the reason it's not going to happen is because Biden has just allowed all of the Obama people who wanted to make sure that the Iranians had the nuke deal and placate them as much as possible, try to buy them off. And they've done all of that. I'll talk more about this next week, okay? But the reality is at this point that Hamas is on the verge of losing, and that's a step in the right direction for peace. And yet, Biden is hampering this. And so one has to ask the question, why? And I think there's a two-part answer to that. One part of it is the fact that the Obama influence is still strong in the White House, and Obama hated Netanyahu. Why? I think I said this 2 weeks ago. Because Netanyahu had the audacity to say that the nuclear deal with Iran that Obama was so happy for was a flawed document. Okay? And so what did Obama do? He sent people, I mean, I hate to repeat myself, but Obama sent people over there to try to defeat Netanyahu in, I think it was the 2015 election. Money and people. And nothing has changed. Because here you have Biden arguing for a change of government in the middle of this damn war. So the context of Biden's opposition to Netanyahu runs deep. Okay? The second part of my point here would be that, old Uncle Joe has a political problem. If you've noticed, Ilhan Omar and Tlaib, these two Muslim representatives support Hamas. So you say, well, what's the big deal there? Well, here's the big deal. 20% of the Minnesota's people who voted in their primary voted uncommitted. Oh my God. And guess what? In Michigan, that primary, 100,000 of those people in Michigan voted uncommitted. Well, how does that translate into a political problem? Well, it's not too hard to figure that one out. Biden has a problem of and again, the blue wall issue, keeping the battleground states blue. Well, got two major problems right there. And so, oh my God, the solution. Well, he's got to placate Tlaib and Omar. Well, how can we do that? Can we just talk the talk? Or do we have to do something to prove to the Muslims out there in Dearborn and Minnesota that, yeah, we got your back? And so one could make the case that slowly Biden's support for Israel has eroded. Okay? What was, we've got your back, has now got to the point where this is unacceptable. It's that simple. Okay? So here, American politics are driving the train in terms of what Biden's going to do about this threat that the Islamic jihadists are making towards Israel. I mean, are we really going to accept the fact that the Iranians want to get rid of the great Satan, us, and the little Satan, Israel, and that they're really not going to do anything about reaching their goals? I mean, as it stands right now, it's obvious what's happening with the Iranians. Once Biden gave them life post-Trump with money and the ability to sell their oil, and what did they do with all that money that they got? They weren't building schools and building roads and taking care of their people with a new health care system. Oh, no. They're funding the terrorists who were screaming for money during the Trump years because they weren't getting any money because the Iranians didn't have any money. And why didn't they have any money? Because Trump had them on their knees because of the sanctions. All right, so if American politics are going to drive the train here, then we are in sad shape, obviously. But it seems to me that those of us who see what's going on need to be pushing hard to our federal representatives to stand tall on this and to do what we have to do to make sure that Israel does not get thrown under the bus. Let's see, what's a recent example of allies getting thrown under the bus? Oh, yes, right. Here we have Afghanistan in the summer of 21, and Biden pulls the plug on 20 years of support. Okay? No different than what the Democrats forced Nixon and Ford into doing with Vietnam in 1975. No different at all. All right, so I wanted to talk about foreign policy, and there's one part of it, okay? this other part that I want to get into has to do with Ukraine. Now, I know that we've talked about the Ukraine issue many, many different times, okay? And my position has been we need to support Ukraine, okay? Putin is a bad actor. He has, you know, dreams of resurrecting the Soviet Empire. The problem he faces is that particularly the former members of that Soviet Empire, like the Baltic states, are part of NATO. So he immediately has to be very careful about what he does, because the last thing he wants to do is have war with NATO. Not in his interest, okay? But he also has issues with Ukraine. Okay, we've seen how these issues have played out. The Eastern Territories have a lot of Russian-speaking people. They want to be under Russian rule. And so we've had, you know, year after year after year before the war started of this back and forth about how this is going to work. Remember that Obama allowed Putin to take back Crimea, and that just happened. Nothing was said about it. No red lines, no nothing. Okay? And again, we get back to a broader problem with Biden in terms of foreign policy, that he has been wrong on so many issues. And I know I have said that to you all before, but when Robert Gates used to work for Biden as for Obama, as the defense secretary and former CIA guy, made this point in one of his books after he finished his tour of duty as the defense secretary, that Biden had been wrong on so many different foreign policy issues. And so one has to take this into account as we look at what's going on. Okay? Just run the reel back a little bit to, you know, August of 21, what happened in Afghanistan. Despite being, and again, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Milley and McKenzie came to Washington, talked about Afghan withdrawal. Okay? It's a no-brainer, say, that Biden pulled the plug without thinking through the full, you know, meaning of what he was doing. But he didn't care. These generals told him, don't do what you're going to do. Give it time. Got 2,500 people there. We're holding the line. We've not been, and Trump had no casualties this last year. That didn't matter. Biden wanted that political moment of fame, him to end the war in Afghanistan before 9/11, the anniversary. And so he pulled the plug. The disaster of it did not just center on the Afghan people who got sold out, and particularly the people who supported us, okay? You ended up having the reverberation go worldwide. Because here again, a sign of weakness that someone like Putin, someone like Xi in China, these folks were going to take, and the Iranians, these folks were going to take a look at this and say, this is the time for us to do what we want to do in our fields of interest and making sure that our interests will be taken care of. So, what does Putin do? He begins moving troops to the border, and at the time it's all happening, instead of building up the Ukrainian forces, especially with air defenses, things like that, Biden just waits around. So Putin's getting a clear signal that all of this is okay. And so launches the attack. And the next thing you know, Biden is incrementally supporting Ukraine. Instead of putting lots of heavy equipment and doing everything you need to do, send a strong signal before Putin launches the damn war. No. Now we're back to doing this incremental business that the Democrats were famous for in Vietnam. It didn't work then, and it didn't work in sending a signal to Putin, don't do it. And so now we're stuck with this Ukrainian war, which doesn't seem to have any real end point, because what's the diplomatic solution to it? I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. What does a diplomatic solution look like? One can argue that prior principles of self-determination of people could lead you to some sort of a negotiated settlement. And we've seen these things before in history, and it seems to me that reasonable to think something along these lines. Now, it may be unpalatable to Zelensky to have to give up those eastern territories, but if those people in the east want to live under Ruski rule, then maybe that's the starting point to end the war and deal with it. Now, what are Putin's war aims here? If they are bigger than just taking care of the eastern areas and keeping the Crimea, then that's a different issue. But at this point, on the one hand, Biden and Blinken are pushing Israel to do what? Come to terms, cease fire, deal with the hostages, you know, more humanitarian aid, doing something along those lines, okay? While on the other end of the spectrum here in Ukraine, what are they doing? Pouring more money into it. I mean, unaccounted for money, really, but we won't get into that right now. So it's an open-ended commitment to Ukraine fighting this war, and from a diplomatic standpoint is where I think it's dangerous, because Blinken's on TV the other day. And what is he talking about? Making Ukraine part of NATO. Now, I don't know about you all, but as much as I want to support the Ukrainians, I have, I've also couched my support in terms of this is a limited war, okay? And there should be limited objectives, all right? And so within that framework, how do we essentially make Russia pay a sufficient price to accept some sort of a negotiated settlement? Well, let's put it this way. If Biden had had half a brain, he never would have allowed the Russians to reopen the pipeline to Germany, which was blown up, but nevertheless, notice that did. It created a situation where money was going to be flowing into Russia, which could pay for the Russians' war in Ukraine. Fareed Zakaria and Tom Friedman from the New York Times, both super libs, and I've mentioned this last year, I think, when we talked about this, they made the point that Biden had no strategic object in terms of how to make Russia for the war they were conducting. And despite the fact that Biden kept saying these are the worst sanctions and all like that, that's just not true. And so if Biden did not have a strategic plan that would make Russia pay for this, then it seems to me that we're on the wrong track right from the get-go with this. And so now you've got a situation where Russia is supported by the Iranians, Chinese, and NATO is doing its part to a degree. But But at the same time, we have no real overall strategy that would take into account dealing with those people who are supporting the Russians and dealing with the Russians' ability to fund that war. And the reason why we don't is because of the Green New Deal. I mean, Biden and them just shut down American energy, which was the major source of problems for the Russians. Okay? You shut down American energy, and gas and oil are now flowing from the Iranians into Russia's and supporting by the, with the Chinese. And so my point here, that back to Gates, Biden has made so many mistakes in foreign policy, you can't list. Actually, I did list them. In 2020, I sent a note out, and it drew a lot of ire from lots of people, basically saying, this is the reason why Biden should not be president, because of his failures in foreign policy. Okay, I'm going to send that out again, obviously. But the point here is, look at what he has done. Okay? So he's created a mess, and I say created. Putin created the mess by attacking Ukraine. I get that. But look at the calculation Putin is making, that the under Biden, the Americans are not going to do anything until he gets what he wants. And given what Biden did at the beginning of this, and right before Putin attacked Ukraine, you can certainly understand that the signals Biden was sending were very weak. So we're back to square one on this. Okay? So given Biden's creation of the problem, what are they doing except making the problem worse at this juncture by suggesting that Ukraine should go into NATO? Now, I've talked about this over the years. Clinton really started the ball rolling in terms of opening NATO to Ukraine. Okay, so we can argue till the cows come home about the utility of doing that, all right? However one feels about that, at this particular juncture, knowing that Putin sees Ukraine in much different terms than the Baltic states in NATO, Poland in NATO, all that, okay? It is fundamentally different. And given that fundamental difference, it seems to me that we should be treading lightly over the idea of bringing Ukraine into NATO. I mean, what is the point of that at this juncture when Zelensky's holding his own to a certain degree? I mean, we've had Putin threaten to use nukes, particularly last year, and I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. If you put Putin into a bind, and I know that we don't want to fight wars with our hands tied behind us, I get that. But on the other hand, if we create a situation where Ukraine is so strong that Biden has to accept negotiated settlement, why is there something wrong with that? Okay? And why should we not restrain Ukraine from doing things like sending drones to attack parts of Russian infrastructure and all like that? Here again, I understand why Zelensky wants to do that. Russia's attacked Ukraine, so we're going to do everything we can. I get that. But them doing everything they can means what? sending drones to Moscow, which they have done, and perhaps they were not responsible for the attack a couple of weeks ago in Russia, the terrorist attack. But here again, isn't it a real slippery slope that we're on when all of a sudden Zelensky is going to be emboldened to go further in terms of his own defense by reaching into Russia to attack Russian targets? And you say, oh, Dr. Liu, you've gotten soft. You're wobbly here. It's not being soft. It's giving the Ukrainians the ability to kill more Russians inside Ukraine and shooting down as drones and airplanes as we can and rockets that are coming in. Make them a porcupine that they are invulnerable to anything that the Russians are doing. That's what we need to do. And I think that, you know, that slippery slope of allowing Zelensky to just have wholesale, you know, wartime capabilities that are going to push Putin into using a nuke to deal with this is something that is not in our interest. It's certainly not in the Ukrainians' interest either. Because anything they do in terms of forcing Putin to pay a price militarily by attacking certain targets is going to come back on them to the point where they are going to pay the ultimate price with a nuke strike on Kyiv. Is that what we really want? Is that really necessary? It seems to me that we can have our cake and eat it too by making Zelensky as strong as possible so that the Ruskies are paying a major, and they're already paying. Thousands of the Ruskies have died in Ukraine, and that's good for us. But what's not good for us is to see this thing turn into World War III. So I'll leave it at that. I do think that, you know, I've got a few more minutes to go before. Well, I might not even have any more. Mark, how much time do I have left?
Just a couple of minutes, Dr. Liu.
Couple of minutes. Okay, so I've used my time. So what I will do is next week I'll cover those issues that I want to talk about, you know, like the border, the budget bill, you know, the tanker that hit the Francis Scott Key Bridge. I mean, is that terrorism? I mean, do we really know? If you look at that film, you watch that ship move to the right, move to the south. How does that happen? Kind of strange, one would argue. So, Mark, well, there's my timer just went off, Mark. So I'll wrap it up here, but I do appreciate everyone listening. We'll be back next Friday, and until then, you all have a great week. Great weekend. We'll see you later. Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Liu. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Liu Campomenosi, former president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science. This program is a paid-for by an anonymous donor. The opinions and views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or management. We now return you to our regularly scheduled music, 1480 WABF.
Join us for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, Friday mornings from 10:05 until 10:35. Dr. Liu is back as your fill-in host on WABF 1480.